This poem that we just read is a really difficult poem to read, but it really does express a lot of the confusion that people, victims in these types of abusive relationships feel. The relationships can, you know, go in a cycle of sometimes being really good, and then all of a sudden, you know, something happens and there's tension, and then some kind of, you know, physical violence or really very severe emotional or mental abuse, but also how often people who abuse others use things that we would associate as good things, like flowers, to either try to, you know, hook or keep the person in the relationship, or like in the case of one of the ladies that I worked with, her husband would bring home flowers, and she knew when he did that she was going to get beat that night. So flowers became a very negative thing for her. And the other thing that happens is this poem also shows that victims don't often realize the danger they're in until it's too late or until they're seriously hurt. But also that there's a lot of complications in leaving these relationships. You know, people often ask us, or we might ourselves, why doesn't that person leave that relationship? It's so bad. But they may share children with that other person. And in order to protect the children, they may feel like it's better if I'm there, because the children might then become the target of abuse if I leave, or if I leave, that other person's going to take the children. And also there's a lot of connections. There's financial connection, there's family and friends that we share. And so I think it's just good to kind of understand the dynamics of these relationships and why they're hard to leave. When people do decide to leave, it often is the most dangerous for them. At that time, we see a lot of victims are seriously injured when they attempt to leave. And so that's one of the reasons that we're here as Skagit Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Services, is to provide support for victims, to help them understand what their danger level is, and to safety plan around whether they decide to stay or leave a relationship. How can they help themselves stay safer? The other thing that often happens in these relationships is children who are living in households with violence are very impacted by what's going on around them, even if they don't necessarily see the physical violence. They are affected, you know, they tend to have more anxiety. They have trouble learning in school, as you can imagine. If you're going to school and you're anxious and worried about your family, it is hard to concentrate. Children who grew up in these homes are 6 times more likely to attempt to commit suicide and 50 times more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol. And without sharing a lot of statistics, just so you know, domestic violence is the leading cause of death and injury to women in the United States, and has really stayed that way since I've been involved for about 12 years in this line of work. And also it's one of the 3 top causes of homelessness for women and children in America. So it's definitely a problem, and it's still a problem today. And in addition to that, in Skagit County, we rank number 8 of the 39 counties in Washington state in terms of the highest incidence of domestic violence per 100,000 people. So it is a problem not just everywhere, but actually in our own community. But the hope is with intervention and resources and support, the cycle of violence can be stopped, so that we often see that children who grow up in homes with violence, you know, will continue that pattern, whether it's becoming abusive or the victim of abuse, or just, you know, learning some pretty dysfunctional ways of handling conflict and things like that. So we're here to provide that intervention and prevention work that we do. so things don't have to be like this, so victims can actually heal from trauma and go on and make safer, healthier choices for themselves and their children. So some of the ways that people access our services, we have a 24-hour hotline. And so anybody, any victim at any time of the day or night can call us and get help right away. And oftentimes what that looks like is somebody might, say a friend or family member might give our number to somebody, and they may call. And they might not necessarily understand that they're really in an abusive relationship, but they just know that something isn't right. And they might not understand that a lot of what they're experiencing might be kind of controlling. What we see a lot of is people's partners will kind of just gradually isolate them. So they're, you know, they slowly over time aren't allowed to go out and maybe do something with their friends or their own family or have maybe a job or a hobby or an interest outside of that relationship. And their world becomes really narrow. And therefore, it's hard for them to like kind of contradict the messages that other person might be telling them, like, nobody could ever love you but me, you're not worth anything. You know, they hear those kinds of things. So when you're hearing that one message all the time, a lot of victims do start to believe it. And that makes it, you know, a lot harder for them to recognize what's going on and to get away. So we kind of often on those kind of phone calls, we'll try to help them piece together what's really going on in their relationship by asking questions, you know, like how long has the relationship been like this? You know, is there any physical violence? Is that getting worse? And then what we do is try to safety plan with them. And we're empowerment based because we recognize that, you know, people have had the power of their own lives taken away from them, and that they have to make the decision for themselves what they want to do. So we don't, you know, we don't ever tell them you have to leave, you got to leave now. We may make them aware of the danger that they are in and what could possibly happen, but we don't make decisions for them because they're the ones that have to live with those decisions too. If they make, you know, if they decide to leave or not leave, they're going to have to deal with whatever comes as a result of those decisions. But what we do is help them understand what some of their choices are. And safety plans can look like, okay, if you decide to stay, and what are some signs that tension is rising, things are maybe about to explode. And when that happens, like, what are some things that you've done in the past that keep you safe? Or what are some things you could do? Is there a friend's house or a neighbor's house you could go to? Do you feel comfortable calling the police? Some people don't, because a lot of times after the police leave, that can be really dangerous for the victim if they're not taken by the police. But we talk about, like, what are safer rooms in the house if somebody gets upset with you? And also, like, if you think that you need to leave this relationship or you want to leave, how can you plan for that? You know, make sure that you have the appropriate forms of ID with you and some money if you can get any money tucked away. And then we help with resources and things like that. We also have a collaborative program with all our local police departments now. So it's called the Lethality Assessment Protocol. And what that is local law enforcement have now an 11-question assessment tool that they use to gauge the victim's danger level. And when the victim scores in on those questions, and the questions are kind of like, has he ever tried to strangle you before or choke you? You know, does he have a weapon? Have you ever tried to leave before? If that victim scores high on that assessment, a local police officer immediately connects the victim with one of our advocates on our hotline so that we're talking to them right then and there. So the law enforcement officer, one of them will be talking to the victim, the other will be dealing with the abusive partner. And then we can immediately offer them, if they need safe shelter, we have a safe confidential shelter for them, or once again, safety plan around, maybe the police are taking him in today, but a lot of times these people get out of the jail within 24 hours, And they're usually quite angry when they get back for being, having been arrested. And so, you know, we check back the next day with that person to see how they are and if they at that time think that they need to get away. And if so, do they have somewhere to go or do they need help doing that? So other ways that we connect with both adults and youth is through our prevention programs in local schools. So we provide prevention education in health classes and from elementary through high schools. And oftentimes when we do that, we're talking about like what healthy relationships look like and setting boundaries and helping with self-esteem and self-worth. And also, you know, what teen dating violence looks like and technology safety and things like that. But often when we're doing those presentations afterwards, a youth might come up to us who's experienced sexual assault or who has who's living in a home where there's violence going on. And then we'll talk to one of our advocates and then we start arranging to meet with that youth at school. We do what's called mobile advocacy, so we can go to a school and meet privately with youth there. And just help them through what they're going through. And once again, talk to them about resources that they might need, whether it's, you know, therapy or, you know, help, maybe talking to the parents, just different things like that. And some other ways that we connect with people are we support parents and children at the Child Advocacy Center. I don't know if any of you have heard of the Bridget Collins Child Advocacy Center. But basically, it's a place where children who are victims of sexual abuse can go and like have if they need a forensic exam or a doctor exam or if they need to be interviewed by the police, instead of having to go to the hospital and have the police show up there or go to a police department, they just go to this house. And actually, our agency worked with Bridget Collins to set that center up back in 2010. In Mount Vernon. So we provide the advocacy piece of it. So while the child's getting the exam, we start out, we'll explain the process to the child and the parent, but then also we will sit with the parent and answer any questions they might have about how this might have impacted my child or what are some things that I can do. And we provide resources for them at that point. So, and then sometimes we get referred by a friend or family member, and sometimes the friend or the family member also would like some counseling around, you know, what they're experiencing. So maybe they're not directly in that relationship, but their sister or, you know, somebody in the family is in a relationship like that, but doesn't want to leave and doesn't seem to even recognize it. And so we will also work with friends and family members to help them, like take care of themselves and maybe help with some information that they can give that other person when they're ready to recognize what's going on. So what we do look like? I thought you guys might like to know. Some of the things that we do is what advocacy is about is we actually believe victims. And that sounds really basic. But for a lot of victims, they may either not have been safe to tell anybody else what's going on in their relationship, or sometimes people don't believe them because their husband or their partner may be really charming to other people and, you know, really look like a really great person. But then behind closed doors, there's violence going on. There's different kinds of verbal and emotional abuse going on. And so a lot of times they aren't believed by other people. And of course, you know, if they come out and talk about that, sometimes then people just immediately go to quick judgment. Well, then just leave. Why have you stayed this long? Why would you put yourself in this situation? So anyway, by believing them and supporting them, it's a powerful tool for them to be supported for the first time. I mean, we often see people break down and cry and say, you're the first person I've told this, or you're someone finally believes me. So that is a super powerful and an important part of what we do. And then, as I've already mentioned a couple of times, we do help them like just assess their safety level and plan for their future safety and know what kind of choices that they might have. And then also just help them with all the different resources that are available. A lot of people don't realize that there are, you know, there's housing programs. Of course, we have our shelter. There's transitional programs, housing programs as well. And then we have some financial assistance that emergency type financial assistance that we can help them with. And we also help people with like putting together a resume and looking for a job and some of those types of needs as well. And then also we just provide that supportive services for them. And some of those are, we have a variety of support groups at our agency. And so we meet as groups. We have two different domestic violence support groups. One is in English and the other is in Spanish. And then we have a youth and an adult sexual assault support group. So, and some of those are in person right now, and some of those are remote. So people have a choice how they, what they feel comfortable with. But those are great ways for victims not only to kind of get educated a little bit about abuse and how it affects them and how they can heal from trauma, but also to be in a group with people who are experiencing what they're going through. And that's probably the most powerful part of our groups is that people get to be in a group with other people and realize they're not alone. And so then some of the other services we offer, we do provide what's called legal advocacy, which means we're not lawyers and we don't help with the, you know, any kind of representation or advice or anything, but we emotionally support people and educate them about the different legal processes that they might be involved with. Often victims will decide to try to get a protection order, which keeps the other person from, you know, being on the same premises that they are, or maybe possibly from accessing the children if the children have been involved somehow in the violence. And we help them write those orders, and we will go to court with them and sit with them, because you can well imagine that if, you know, you have to go to a court hearing for the protection order and that other person is going to be in the room, which for some victims can be very intimidating. The other person often also has an attorney, which a lot of times people that access our services can't afford. So they often have kind of an advantage there. And then we also help, you know, we have parenting plan workshops where a lot of people have to file a parenting plan if they're going through a separation or divorce. And so we help people understand the choices they have there and the process for doing that. And then some people have criminal cases, and so we support them through that process of just any hearings that they might have to go to and things like that. Occasionally a victim gets arrested at the scene of an incident. Sometimes what happens is they're cornered for hours, and finally the victim decides to try to punch or scratch the other person just to get out of the trap that they're in. And then sometimes law enforcement arrives and that the other person is the one with the scar, a scratch, and so they end up getting arrested. Doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. And so that's another thing that we do is we educate local providers, including law enforcement, on, you know, how to look at relationships and really tell who you know, who has power in that relationship and what's, you know, a little bit more about what might be going on, what questions to ask and things like that. We also, so our just to talk a little bit about our shelter, because that's one of our largest programs and one that people are usually really interested in. It is a confidential house. So it's in a confidential location. It's considered an emergency shelter, which means that people stay around between 30 and 60 days there. It's meant to be just a first step on, you know, getting people safe. And it's just a house with 7 bedrooms. We have 21 beds, but it's communal, so people do share a kitchen and that big dining area, and they all have their own bedrooms. The families have their own bedrooms and things like that. At the shelter, we have a family advocate who helps with the children. So we, I think, recognized long ago that it's sometimes we're so focused on the parent that the children kind of are there, but they're not really provided their own services. So about 6 years ago, we designed a program specifically to, work with the kids with activities and art therapy. And then we also help with parenting, things like communication between the child and the parent and discipline. Because a lot of times parents have their parenting undermined by that other partner, and or maybe they just growing up never had or really saw good parenting. And so that has been a great service that we offer. And then while people are staying at our shelter, they meet with an advocate usually, at least once a week to go over like their housing options, and we help them try to find more permanent housing or kind of design a step-by-step process for them to get to the point where they could support themselves possibly and look for jobs and all of those things. And we do life skill classes there too. So help with budgeting or maybe meal planning. In non-COVID times, we cook community meals and do, some different things than we've been able to do the last 2 years just because of COVID. But another thing that the agency does to support people is we do a lot of outreach to, Skagit's a huge county. So we provide services up in the East County, at the East County Resource Center, the Concrete Resource Center. We have an advocate up there a couple of times a month who can meet with people who have trouble like driving all the way to Mount Vernon to have services or to get our services. And then also we have bilingual advocates. So we reach out to like the migrant farm population here in Skagit and some of the Hispanic communities and provide that advocacy in their own language. So, we kind of travel different parts of the county to be able to do that. And then we have some connections as well with some of the tribal populations in our county so that we're reaching out to victims in tribes, because a lot of times when you're living in a smaller community within the larger Skagit community, everybody knows everybody, and it's still not very safe if you go to somebody in the community and you let them know that you're being abused, but that person happens to be like a tribal elder or something like that, it can be really unsafe. So we want to provide services to as much as possible, a way for anybody in our community to be able to reach out to us if they need to. And then again, lastly, I mentioned our prevention education program, but that is super important to our mission, which is to end domestic violence and sexual assault in our community. And so in order to do that, it requires like the involvement of the entire community, but it also requires us providing prevention education for, everybody from young children all the way to adults, so that we can figure out and learn about, healthy and healthy relationships before we get into an abusive relationship. So we do prevention groups at the area Boys and Girls Clubs, which is really awesome. So we'll do like these 13-week, once a week clubs where the kids learn activities that kind of deal with all these issues and educate them in a fun way and age-appropriate way. And then we go into the Skagit Juvenile Detention Center twice a month and do a prevention group there with those young people, and work with Oasis Teen Shelter. The last 6 months with COVID, we haven't been able to do it, but we used to go in and do prevention groups at Oasis, and we will be getting back to that fairly soon. And then I guess last thing we'll say is we provide also advocacy for sexual assault victims at all our area hospitals. So Skagit Regional or Island Hospital or United General can call our hotline. They do when they get have a sexual assault victim show up at the hospital. And we just provide on-site advocacy. So we will just send an advocate to that hospital to meet with the victim and to sit with them if they decide to get like a sexual assault exam. Those things can take up to 6 hours. So we sit with the victim through that, explain the process and help. While the nurse has to do the medical pieces of that, we are involved in just supporting that person through that. And then we, just like we do with the LEP calls, we connect with that victim the next day to offer them supportive services as well. So, like I said, we can't do this work without the community's involvement. And so I really appreciate you having me here today and also just the support that you guys have given us. And it's great, you know, no matter what kind of support it is. So obviously financial support is always helpful, but also just spreading the word, if, you know, getting out, you know, the word that we're here, if you recognize that maybe somebody you know might be in an abusive relationship, you know, giving them our number or, you know, so that they might contact us. And then just talking, the more we all talk about the fact that this is going on in our community, the less of a, you know, kind of a difficult subject it becomes. It's not a subject that a lot of people want to hear about or talk about. So appreciate the fact that you guys on a Sunday morning are willing and wanting to have these conversations.